Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Business Radio X, and today we're going to be talking to Margot Brandenburg on Thought Leader Radio. Thought Leader Radio is where we interview the best and the brightest doing the most interesting things, and Margot is no exception. Welcome, Margot.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Lee.
You're with My Strong Home. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Sure, and thanks for the chance to be with you today. Let's see, My Strong Home is a new, really a first-of-its-kind company that combines specialized construction, on the one hand, with financing and insurance to help people get new hurricane-resistant roofs. And I know that's kind of a mouthful, but basically we are a smart way to get a new roof, particularly if you live in a hurricane-prone area, and we give folks a chance to proactively invest in their home.
So Is the roof something that you would put on before you have a problem, or is this something to replace a roof that you've had a problem with?
Great question. Before, we're really trying to get people who live in hurricane-prone areas to be proactive. So I'll explain how it works. Roofs are really the first line of defense against hurricanes, tornadoes, other major events. And without a strong roof, the home is really very vulnerable. Insurance companies know this, and so they're willing to lower, and often substantially lower, their homeowner's premium if customers get these new strong roofs. So we are able to come in with one of our carefully selected contractor partners, put on the hurricane-proof roof, get someone the same level of insurance coverage that they currently have, but at a rate that could be half as much. I mean, we have literally saved people $2,000 a year on their insurance. And we take that savings over the next some number of years, and we use it to pay for the upfront cost of the roof. So the homeowner gets a new roof, they get peace of mind, and often they pay little or nothing more than they were already paying for their insurance. And so if you're, it's, like I say, it's a new model, but if you're familiar at all with solar financing or energy financing, there's some similarities, except we put a roof, not a solar panel, on a house, and we save folks money on their insurance instead of their energy bills.
So now, when is the new roof, can you talk about the construction of it? What makes it so fortified?
Absolutely. Well, we use a third-party standard called Fortified. It's managed by the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, and they've spent years testing and refining their standards. They actually have a big laboratory in South Carolina where they actually simulate hurricanes using, 30, 40-foot fans and hail guns, and really they simulate all kinds of weather disasters. But their standards are really best in class, and we use that to certify all of our homes. But it's actually kind of surprisingly low tech. I mean, we're in this era where everything is an app, but, you know, what we do is use things like 8-inch ring shank nails to attach the roof deck, or peel and stick, a kind of a secondary underlayment underneath your shingles. So if you lose a shingle during a storm, you've got something else to keep out the water damage. If you have what's called gables or soffits, they're things that the wind can really get in and uplift during a storm. So those are really points of vulnerability, and we'll sheathe or fortify those. So these are all things that make a home, like I say, much safer. You can't see them. So, you know, from the look on the street, it's just a really nice looking new roof. But underneath, we've put in these bells and whistles that make a big difference.
Now, you mentioned protection from wind and hail and rain and things like that. Does it also protect against like branches and fallen objects?
Yeah, I mean, the roof is safer. It's designed specifically for high wind and hurricanes, so I should say the standard really has that in mind. But yes, it is a safer, more durable roof across the board.
And then, so you're primarily going after the ones like in the hurricane zones? That's your primary target?
We are. Right now, we are active and open for business in 5 states. We're in South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. We'd like to be active in Texas pretty soon. But yes, those are very hurricane-prone areas, and that's why we selected them. You know, I do think this model of looking at expensive, risky weather events and finding what we call the mitigation measures that pay for themselves and are really win-win, you know, for the family and the homeowner, for the insurance company, and frankly, for the taxpayer. Well, that's a model that we can apply to wildfire risk in the West, to all kinds of perils. But for now, we know this is, you know, pretty kind of groundbreaking in its own right. So we are focused on hurricane risk in those five states that I mentioned.
Now, your background, is it in construction and kind of roof building, or is it more into...
You would think, right? I'm talking about ring shank nails and gable bracing.
It was very impressive.
My background is actually neither in construction nor insurance, although I have partners who are very much experts in those fields. But my background is in this world of sort of impact investing and impact business models. And I have a number of experiences with energy finance, which I mentioned earlier, and community development finance. And it was actually, I live in New York, even though we work in the South, and it was experiencing Hurricane or Superstorm Sandy about 5 years ago that made me realize, you know, compared to areas like energy or food or other types of financial services, we have very few innovations and very few business models that are oriented toward making us safer and more resilient. And so I happened to be staffing this commission that the governor of New York set up after Hurricane Sandy and tasked with making recommendations for how New York could be more resilient. And the commissioners were great, the recommendations were great, but they were all aimed at government. And I just thought, you know, government's important, but it's not going to be the only answer. It can't be the only answer. And so was talking to and working with folks who'd been active in New Orleans after Katrina and people who knew much more about construction and insurance than I do. And we realized, you know, that there are these pretty low-tech, high return on investment measures that you can do that both make a home safer and can pay for themselves through insurance savings. So I bring that kind of business model innovation and have been able to look across innovations in other sectors and bring them to bear on what we're doing. But I am not the construction or the insurance person.
So you've never been on a roof?
I have. Well, not on a roof. I've been in a lot of attics. So like I say, it's the stuff on the inside that matters a lot, too. So no, they won't let me on top of the house.
Not yet.
But But I have sweated my way through many an attic in the South in August, which is some small feat.
So now, did you buy an existing business or you created My Strong Home from scratch?
We created My Strong Home from scratch, and we thought long and hard about how to do that. We built the business to serve a purpose, which is to build resilience, but we knew that this needed to grow beyond the reach of philanthropy. And so we set it up as something called a benefit corporation, and we're also a B corporation. And that's a relatively new sort of legal form and designation that means we can be for profit. And so we can tap into investment capital from impact investors and other strategic partners. But we also in our corporate articles have this mission to build stakeholder value, not just shareholder value, and really to build resilience and lower risk.
Now, how do you define stakeholder value? Who are the stakeholders?
Great question. For us, our stakeholders include our investors. It's really primarily, though, about our customers and about giving them the highest quality service that makes them safer, builds the equity in their home, and lowers their long-term insurance costs. An important stakeholder for us is also our contractor partners. There's actually a lot of local economic development that comes from doing this. These are jobs that are good jobs. They can't be outsourced, and they really provide a critical function. So we consider our contractors and their workers to be important stakeholders as well.
So now when you go to a different market than one in which you're in, you're partnering with the construction folks that are putting the roofs on, and they're doing it in the My Strong Home manner?
We do. That's an important process for us. We don't in-house the construction services. We have a network of contractor partners, and we select them very carefully because quality is very important to us, both for customer satisfaction purposes, but also because that's what allows us to lower that insurance rate. We really rely on getting this third-party fortified designation. So the quality is really important. We'll do a decent amount of research when we enter a new market, and then we will vet contractors. We'll give them sort of a trial home to do, if you will. We look at their insurances, do kind of standard due diligence, and then we work in partnership with them. So we want to answer questions they have about the standard, and we want to exert the amount of oversight that ensures they're going to do the job well. And our contractor partners don't get paid until the job is done and until that fortified certification is received. So in a sense, we're acting as sort of a mini GC for our customers.
And then, so when you go into a given market, do you have one construction partner, or you might have several, depending on, I guess, the size?
It's a great question. We typically have a few per state. We have intentionally not tried to grow our contractor network as large as possible because of that role of quality control, and also because we want to partner with them. We want to be available to them, like I say. So we've kept the network on the smaller side by design, but we do need to have, the right capacity, and so we need to have, backup options in each market. So I would say we have on average, a handful per state.
Now, the value you're providing the contractor is that you're kind of a lead generator, and they're getting to leverage, your B Corp and the brand and the fortified certified roof. And is that accurate?
Yes. Yep. We bring them leads. We do all the upfront work with the homeowner to help them understand, what's on offer. And the homeowner knows that for our part, we've selected that contractor selected that contractor carefully. So we're lead generation, but we're also providing financing for a roof, which is honestly a little bit of an awkward price point. It's, call it $10,000 to maybe $15,000 on average. And for a lot of people, that's much more than they would have sitting in their checking account or their savings account, and more than they can put on their credit cards, but not quite enough to justify the hassle of going to the bank and applying for a home equity line of credit. So it's in that sort of gray area in terms of the options that are available to pay for it. And we do have low-cost financing available, and we have financing from impact investors like Calvert Impact Capital and others who care about our mission. And so we provide 7-year unsecured debt at a much cheaper rate than anyone would be able to find elsewhere. And the contractors know that paying for a high-quality roof is often challenging. So I think that's part of what they believe our value add to be. And then they're just good people. I mean, they want people to get the best possible product. And so I think, they like working with us for that reason as well.
And then when the customer is saving the money on the homeowner's insurance, it's the gift that keeps on giving, because these roofs probably last longer than a traditional roof. Is that true?
Yep. Well, let me see. I don't want to promise that, but we use best in class materials, and those all have 20 to 30 year warranties on the product. So the shingle doesn't necessarily have a longer warranty as a result of being fortified. But yes, we are using durable, high quality products that are going to last, and they're going to last much longer than the homeowner's payment obligation to us. So to your point, we're using those savings for the first 7 years to pay back the roof. And then after that, the homeowner continues to get the benefit of the insurance discount, and we're out of the picture. So then that's just money in their pocket.
Now, you also are the author of a book, The Power of Impact Investing. Can you talk about how you got involved with impact investing and why that's so important?
Sure. I started out in impact investing sort of in the fields of microfinance and what we call community development finance almost 20 years ago.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we thought it was just entering kind of public consciousness or mainstream then, and then it's hit new levels, I'm happy to say. But for me, it was these, you know, financial services innovations, you know, around 2007, 2008, actually right before the financial crisis. I was at the Rockefeller Foundation and connected with people, entrepreneurs and investors who'd come out of renewable energy finance or other what we would now call impact investments, but before we had a name for it. And we each thought, well, gosh, I have a business or a business model, and it should pay for itself and maybe generate a profit, but we're also in it for this other reason. Maybe there's sort of a bigger tent there. Maybe there's, you know, things we have in common, investment mechanisms that would be replicable across sector, across geography. And so the term impact investing was coined. And I think it's, you know, it's really created a center of gravity for investors, for fund managers, for entrepreneurs. You know, there just isn't enough money in philanthropy and in the government combined to solve the problems of the 21st century. So we need philanthropy and we need government, but we also need to tap into the substantial resources and the human capital innovation from the private sector. And I think, you know, this burgeoning field of impact investing is really a great way to do that.
And then that was behind you getting making this company a B Corp?
It is. I mean, like I say, I knew that we wanted to embed our public purpose, if you will, into the DNA of the company. And we wanted that to be something that was non-negotiable. But we also knew that we wanted to be able to raise money from other than just foundations. In our case, you know, impact investors, we wanted to be able to take equity, which nonprofits can't take equity. I mean, there's no owners by definition. So that kind of growth capital, that risk-taking capital that an endeavor needs in its early stages, the 501c3s, nonprofits have a hard time tapping into it. And so for that reason, the Benefit Corp structure was really good for us. I will say we... in New York, where I live, there's an increasing awareness of B Corps and of this sort of new hybrid type of enterprise. In some of the places that we work, that concept is less known. So we spend a fair amount of time having to explain what it is. But I think the concept is really resonant with people.
Are you seeing more and more people embracing it?
We are. And often the language is different, you know, business for social responsibility or just doing the right thing, or even businesses that say, you know, I'm going to do right by my employees or by my customers. You know, this concept of business having a responsibility to some other stakeholder than just its owners, and a sort of a longer term outlook than just the next quarter. I do think that's something that is getting increasing take up from people, and it's exciting, and frankly, it's really needed.
Yeah, I think we all have to work together, public, private, nonprofits. All everybody's got to kind of collaborate.
Do their part.
And, you know, if everybody just kind of keeps their eye on serving, I think we'll be all much better off.
It's true, and you know, I will say, get some. Are received with some skepticism. You know, we're not a traditional nonprofit, and so people want to know why. At the same time, we do a lot of things that a quote-unquote traditional business might not do because there's just an easier way to make a dollar. So, you know, there are questions that we find ourselves needing to answer, but we think they're the right conversations, and we're happy to have them.
And so what's next? Are you just looking to expand and get into these other natural disasters after you mastered hurricanes?
Right. After we've taken care of hurricanes, we'll move on to the next one. What's next? Well, I mean, we are still, you know, combining construction and insurance and financing into one business. We make it simple for our customers, but there's a lot of complexity that we sort of take in and internalize for ourselves. So we're still every day refining our processes and our partnerships. We want to be really good at our core product. You know, unfortunately, last summer's hurricanes accelerated people's awareness of the problem and of the need to innovate and to really have an all-hands-on-deck kind of approach to preparing for future storms. So the silver lining in that is there is, you know, there are new partners at the table. There's new opportunity. We're not yet in Texas. We do very much want to be in Texas. It's a big state. It's very vulnerable. So for now, I think we, you know, we have our hands full with the challenge that we've taken on. But we do have our eye on, you know, ever greater horizons. And as much as we want to have an impact by serving, you know, home after home, we also hope to lead by example and create a kind of a different way of business as usual that, you know, we hope will have an influence on the broader insurance sector, frankly, on the broader sort of disaster management industry that's mostly housed in government. You know, we're eager to lead by example.
And that's staying true to the kind of the power of impact investing, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, when I was at the Rockefeller Foundation, there was a number of us that were trying to build some of the, you know, kind of infrastructure for this field, and everything was at 30,000 feet. And now I often feel like we're at about 3 inches. But the devil's in the details. I mean, when you're offering a service to someone and they're paying for it, even if it's through, you know, avoided costs or future savings, it needs to be high quality. It needs to be, you know, the same quality of service or better than you would want for yourself. So we need to be in the details and in the mechanics. And I think it is in those day-to-day operations that we do realize that really that grander vision. And there's, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of entrepreneurs that are working on different problems, but with a similar passion and hopefully a similar attention to detail and execution. And I think it's all of us sort of working together, even if it's in our different geographies and on our different challenges, that's going to be, you know, what changes and hopefully improves the way we all lead our lives.
And I think it's probably really good for you to have this kind of boots on the ground experience and having to deal with the customer directly. It'll help you with your kind of 40,000 foot view of the challenges when you're actually working with the people whose homes are in play here.
Absolutely. I remember reading, or honestly, we may have even commissioned this consulting report a number of years ago, and it talked about the difference between, I think the consultant called it push and pull services, but basically it comes down to, you know, Candy Crush for your phone versus a financial wellness app, you know, things that human beings are wired to actively want mm-hmm. versus the things that we should have. And often, you know, there's benefit through the things that we should have, you know, the vegetables we should eat, the money we should save away every month, but that honestly sometimes kind of runs against our basic human psychology and day-to-day preferences. And so all this to say, when you're out there with, you know, a service that you think is really groundbreaking for folks, that doesn't necessarily sell itself. You still have to find the right way to describe it to people. You have to build trust with them, because in our minds, you know, we are there for them, but we're an unknown quantity. And so, you know, we need to build that credibility and find a way to connect and make it really accessible to them and easy. So there's work to be done. And I think that keeps us accountable, and it's quite humbling too.
I think that people who are part of kind of large institutions and large bureaucracies should spend some time, you know, doing the work on the ground, and that gives you a different perspective. Because like you said, the people who are meeting you for the first time, that you have to prove yourself, you have to be trustworthy, even though what you're saying makes perfect sense and is logical and it seems like a no-brainer in the boardroom to this person who's in the market, you know. They have different ways of buying, so it may not always be logical or even in their best interest. So it's when you're actually doing the work, you kind of learn a lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we think doesn't matter. It's what the end customer or the homeowner or the family member thinks. And so you're right. It's easy to make up a really pretty or whiz-bang PowerPoint and to have these really brilliant ideas and a large amount of data to support them. But what matters are the actions that people take in their everyday lives and the opportunities that they have available to them. And it is, in a lot of ways much harder to make a difference at that level than it is, you know, like you say, in the boardroom. And it's tremendously valuable.
But I think that if more people like you are actually going down there and doing the work like this, you have a different level of empathy, of understanding what's going on for the people that are having to go through these things.
It gives us empathy, and I think that it makes us better. You know, people in boardrooms are not always the ones that have the best ideas. We've gotten really useful feedback from the folks that we serve, from our customers, from people who haven't chosen to go with us for one reason or the other. And that feedback loop for us is very short because we're a small team. You know, someone gives us feedback and we can, you know, evaluate it and implement it pretty quickly if we think it's the right idea. And I think that, you know, what they call rapid iteration, it makes us a lot better. So you're right, it is something that gives us empathy, and then I think our end product is stronger because of it.
And then it'll let you scale faster because you're learning with real data instead of hypotheticals and modeling.
Yes. The real data is definitely more valuable, and when you ground yourself in that, you know, I think it portends well for the future.
Well, it's an exciting time. I mean, you're offering a really big innovation in roofing just by itself, but also in how you finance and how you can handle a lot of other things. So this seems to be just, you're maybe at the end of the beginning, but there's a lot more to go here with this model, it sounds.
Thank you. Yes, that's a good way to put it. We're at the end of the beginning. We've learned a lot. We think we have a pretty high quality product to offer people, but there's much more to do and much more to learn and much more to innovate on. And we look forward to that. It's an energizing challenge.
Right. And the model is what is, the roof part is important, but if this model works, this can really help a lot of people.
Yes. I mean, we live in a time where, you know, disasters seem to be increasingly frequent and severe. And we need to find ways to take the cost of those disasters and convert them into preventative investments. And we're doing it, you know, with hurricane and high wind events in one part of the country, but it absolutely applies to other types of disasters in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, and to other sort of man-made disasters, if you will. Shifting mentalities and resources and actions to take preventative measures and not just to respond to things after the crisis has erupted. It's hard. I mean, frankly, I do think it kind of, it's a fight against, you know, our basic psychology, which is to pay attention to something after it's become a problem. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't afford to do that. We really need to marshal our creativity and our forward thinking in order to be prepared and to, you know, to invest in our homes and our tax bases and in our basic institutions.
Right. And just be proactive. I mean, there's resources there that allow you to be proactive and prudent with your finances. I mean, this seems like a win-win situation.
It is a win-win. And, you know, if someone just makes the decision to be proactive, we take care of the rest. So if you just call us and say, look, I'm interested, you know, what do I need to do? We'll say, great, we need a little bit of information from you. And if you want, we can take the process from here. And I think that's important. You know, there's something called friction, which has to do with sort of the number of hassle factors that you put in front of someone. And, you know, people should, and we want everyone to be proactive, but we also need to make it easy for them. And
right.
That's an important part of what we do.
And if somebody lives in these kind of high wind areas, they can go to mystronghome.net for more information. Is that the best way to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. They can go on our website, mystronghome.net. You can register there, or you can call us if you don't want to register, and you can talk to someone and they'll answer your questions and tell you how we work.
And then if somebody was interested in your book, The Power of Impact Investing, can they find that there, or do they have to go to Amazon, or what's the best way to get a hold of that?
If someone's interested in The Power of Impact Investing, I think the easiest way to get a copy is just to go on Amazon.
All right, Margo Brandenburg with mystronghome.net. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee. Great talking to you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Thought Leader Radio. We will see you all next time.